Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon.
But does that mean I should pick up Marcus Morris?
He's still on the waiver wire?
I don't know. Is he?
He shouldn't be. Put up 34 last game.
I don't know, man.
He's been amazing this year.
Let's see.
Shooting like 43% from three.
He wasn't getting much playing time for a while, though.
Holy shit, he's actually on the waiver wire. What the hell?
Are you picking him up?
No.
Should I? Over Trey Lyle?
Yeah, it depends who they're planning. Oh, Washington? Yeah, fuck yeah. If you just need like a daily pickup, pick him up.
Okay, sorry, Trey Lyle. I gotta balance out my non-Denver Nuggets roster spot.
Yeah, he's playing Washington, man. You gotta pick him up.
I know, he's gonna dominate Markieff tonight.
Oh yeah, I forgot, they're brothers. Yeah,
take Markieff to town.
Actually, never mind. Those two guys know how to guard each other. Maybe not.
It's too late. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran. And on the line, I got my main man, Josh Cohen, calling out of Ottawa.
What's happening?
How you doing, man? How's the snow up there?
Oh, it's been extremely cold, and it snowed a lot yesterday. But, you know, it's been all right. The roads have been, you know, not the greatest, and there's been a lot of accidents, especially yesterday. I must have driven by, like, four or five accidents, just, you know, within a two-hour time span yesterday.
The hell? Seriously?
Yeah, there's a lot of accidents on the road. It wasn't that bad. It's just people don't know how to drive in the snow. They either drive way too slow or they drive way too fast and get into accidents. So.
And what, you drive the perfect amount? Are you the third bowl of porridge?
Maybe I just got unlucky.
True. Fair enough. All right. So I guess I want to start this week off in Chicago. Obviously, the worst team in the league right now other than Phoenix? I'm assuming other than Phoenix? Are they worse? Yeah, they're worse. But Chicago is an absolute mess. They just got Markkanen back. They just fired their former head coach, Fred Hoiberg, and replaced him with Jim Boylan with an E, so not the guy that we've all seen in the past. But apparently this guy's
It's really weird, too, how there's two Jim Boylans that are both assistant coaches in the NBA.
Well, one is no longer an assistant coach.
Yeah, true.
I don't know how long that'll last for at this rate, from the sounds of it.
Yeah.
That's a messy-ass situation. The players are already revolting against the guy after, like, what, a week in his position?
A couple days, I think. The mutiny is on.
That's crazy, man. So, as like a quick summary, the Bulls have basically went from Tom Thibodeau, who was a hard-ass, to Fred Hoiberg, who was one of the softest coaches. I mean, his players literally said that he needs to coach them harder. And now they've gone back to a hard-ass in Jim Boylan. And he held them out, or held the starters out after a 50-point loss, and then he made them go through a full practice the next day, suicides included.
Oh, he tried to.
What do you mean he tried? No, he ran the practice.
No, he tried to run the practice, but the story was that the players in this group text tried to perform a mutiny, essentially, sort of like what Tracy McGrady did back in the day with the Detroit Pistons, if you remember, when interim coach John Kuster was there. And he was essentially a lame duck coach. He was going through a lot of issues with Tayshaun Prince and Richard Hamilton. And during practice, five players, including Ben Wallace, Rip Hamilton, Tayshaun Prince, and Chris Wilcox, of all people, blast from the past right there. And McGrady, of course. I think McGrady essentially convinced those guys not to show up to practice. And they all had their, you know, alleged excuses, range from illness to...
I think I'm getting the black lung, Bob.
Family issues to just missing the team bus.
Smart.
And they basically wrote him out of town. So it's the same type of idea with Chicago, except nowadays, you know, technology as it is, the players were in a group chat, and the story goes that Lauri Markkanen and Robin Lopez essentially held the team back from just not showing up in general to the practice facility. And then there's been conflicting issues or conflicting reports with how the practice went, and then also who set up a meeting, because the players apparently wanted to just have a players-only meeting, and then Boylan heard about it, and then he wanted to ensure that he was part of the meeting, and his coaches were part of the meeting, obviously. So I think what happened was he met with the players, and then the players had their players-only meeting, and the players did like a very light practice, but NBA rules stipulate that after a back-to-back, you're not supposed to have any type of full practice, and that's what Boylan wanted to do. And then the players tried to complain to the NBA as well as to what Boylan was trying to do and trying to put them through like a two-hour full practice with suicides and all. So this guy's just going like 1970s, you know, hard-ass NBA coach on everyone right now.
This is so weird. Okay, well, firstly, I want to point out that in 2011, you would have Rip Hamilton, Ben Wallace, T-Mac, whatever. These guys are like in their mid-30s at this point, right? Early to mid-30s. All full veterans, multiple champions on this team. You cannot make these guys practice after a back-to-back set. For the Bulls, these guys are like 19, 20, 21 max. And they're pulling this? Man, that is... that's a lot of cojones from them, from the young guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's two ways of looking at it. I mean, you just lost to Chicago. I mean, sorry, to Boston by a gazillion 56. Points.
56 points.
Yeah, 56 points.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you lose like that and your starters get pulled throughout the first 3 minutes of the game, and then I think it was the first 30 seconds of the third quarter, they didn't really play that much. So, you know, maybe they should get their asses back on the practice court so they can improve their games. It's sort of weird, though, because like the game before that, they played against Oklahoma, and they actually beat Oklahoma at home. And Oklahoma has been playing amazing so far this season.
What a fluky game.
That yeah, they went from
a revenge game. That's why.
Maybe. You know, I don't even think he played that game.
No, well, they were there for him. Okay.
Yeah. He's a great cheerleader on the bench.
Exactly. This situation is so strange, man. Like, I've never heard of young guys revolting this bad. And like the best part to me, at least, was Boylan saying, you know, like he was questioned why would you try to have this practice? Why would you make them run for 2 hours? Da da da. And his answer was, well, they didn't play in the fourth quarter, and I figured a hard practice would be better than playing a fourth quarter for the starters. What?
Yeah, it seems like he loves practice more than he actually loves the real games.
My man's going Coach Carter on these kids, man.
Now, I cannot teach you the game of basketball until your conditioning is at a level that allows me to do so. Gentlemen, report to the baseline. To the baseline!
Yeah, I think their first practice too. I think they had a two-a-day during their first practice day where they, you know, worked out in the morning and then at nighttime. And they had like a two-hour session at that nighttime practice as well. Suicides and all. He's probably having them like run up and down the aisles of you know, Chicago Stadium.
United Center has turned into a training facility.
It seems like it.
That's crazy. Who the hell runs two-a-days during the season?
I don't know.
That's absolutely insane. There are other coaches who don't practice whatsoever. Like, Doc is known for not practicing his guys during the season. It's training camp, and then that break between the regular season and the playoffs, and that's it. Otherwise, you're doing a light shoot-around or just video review. Just to boost your IQ, learn other team strategies, whatever. But no one runs a full two-hour practice during the season.
Yeah, and Chicago's management with, you know, Gar Foreman and John Paxson have said that he has, you know, their full support even after all of these, you know, stories keep coming out. He's getting better and better as the stories keep coming out as well. I mean, it started out, you know, on Sunday. They said that, you know, as part of the practice, again, they wanted him to come in, do a two-hour full practice, but then the player just said, this is not going to be happening. And then they went to Jim Boylan afterwards. The reporters asked him about what happened. And he was making it seem as if this is all his idea in having these, you know, players only and players coaches meetings, and that he was, you know, the thinking head behind every single situation that came up. Imagine even though it was clearly the players that were trying to revolt against him. He's like, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. He's trying to keep it in-house when it's like already blown up as this massive story.
Imagine a coach trying to support a players-only meeting.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of like that meme where that animation is stuck in the burning house and he's like, everything is fine. That's the situation.
Good.
Yeah.
Nothing's wrong here.
So it makes you wonder how they're going to get through the season if he continues to do this type of thing. But I'm expecting now he's going to try to tone things down a little bit just to make the story go away for a couple weeks at least. And I'm sure as Christmas time comes around, he's probably going to try to make them practice on Christmas Day, stay away from their families and do like a full 8-hour practice where they do suicides and they may not make it home for Christmas Day.
Guys, I mean, people work 9 to 5. That means you got to run from 9 to 5. Come on.
Yeah.
It's only logical. That's insane, dude. Do you know how long his contract is with them? Because he wasn't named as an interim. He's a full head coach now, right?
They haven't formally stated that, but they said that he's likely going to be the head coach beyond this year. So it's going to be at least another year unless this continues to happen where they're sort of forced by the media and fans to get rid of this guy, which might eventually happen, but he's not a full-time head coach as of yet, I don't believe.
Oh, okay. My bad. I wonder how long he'll last then. Actually, the management in Chicago has backed their coaches for the majority of the time in the past, right? So he'll probably stick around for a while.
Now, the worst part about this is the management is the problem. I mean, the ownership is obviously like the biggest problem, but the ownership... they've kept these two guys on, you know, Gar Forman and John Paxson. Even John Paxson's a Chicago legend, hitting that shot against Phoenix in the finals. But yeah, I mean, these guys have had at least a 10-year tenure. They've been lucky enough to get D. Rose in the draft where they were, I think, the 12th best odds to get him as a number one pick. And, you know, he was a guy that obviously brought a lot of consistency and longevity to Chicago's run, even though he got injured about 4, 5, or 6 years in. But they had a good run with him, obviously, and they got very lucky in getting him. Beyond that, once they started rebuilding, like, it's just been one thing after another. I mean, with Coach Hoiberg, he wanted to run the pace and space system, and instead they brought in Rajon Rondo and D. Wade with Jimmy Butler and played a really slow, grinded-out type of style with no shooting. So they never really gave Hoiberg a chance to succeed. Not saying that he was a good coach anyway, but if you're going to bring in a guy like that, you want to at least give him players that he can properly utilize in his specific system, right? And they just never gave him a chance to do that. And now with Jim Boylan, Mr. Hardass, running team practices
Mr.
like
Hardass.
This. I mean, players are not going to want to sign with Chicago anytime soon if he stays with them. And they're going to have some cap space coming up, and they got a lot of decisions to make with their younger players as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they, you know, react beyond this point. And how they, you know, dole out minutes and what they do in the offseason, because they're in a really bad spot right now.
I wonder if there's no way they think they're actually eligible to get free agents, right? Like, I don't think Chicago signed any major free agents in the past X amount of years. Other than Boozer was probably their last big one.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think they're one of those teams, kind of like Dallas in the past, where it's like, oh yeah, always in contention for a major free agent, but in reality, you know, they're only doing well out of the guys that they draft, and that's when, you know, they land upon Jordan back in the day, Pippen, obviously more recently Derrick Rose, and in between you had like Ben Gordon.
Yeah, most of their talent has been through the draft. And even the guys that they got, Thibodeau sort of ruined them over time as well. I mean, Ben Gordon had a shortened career, I think, because Thibodeau was, you know, playing him way too many minutes based on his play style. And then obviously Luol Deng almost died in the hospital after complications with a spinal injury. And then Thibodeau probably tried to bring him back the very next day.
Oh, Luol Deng, what could have been? Where is he now? He's not with the Lakers anymore, right?
He's with Minnesota, I think.
Oh, yeah, he went there in the offseason.
Yep. I'm glad he's still alive. Yeah, though unfortunately, he signed with Thibodeau again. So, I mean, one injury to Robert Covington, he might be back in the fold playing 20 minutes or 40 minutes a game again. So,
shouts to Luol Deng, man. All right, let's move on. I want to go to another, I guess not another rumor, but a rumor that we've been hearing a lot. Trevor Ariza to the Lakers might actually be a thing. So Ariza obviously signed with the Suns this summer, signed for $15 million a year for the 1 year, and he's not eligible to be traded like any other free agents that signed this summer until December 15th, which is a Saturday. And the Lakers are the most recent rumor, especially since James Jones already sent Tyson Chandler there to relieve him of his pain. Is Ariza next?
Yeah, it seems like LeBron has James Jones on speed dial whenever he needs some help.
Smart man.
So
I would too.
Maybe Devin Booker is next. Who knows?
Ooh.
Maybe they get Devin Booker for Josh Hart, because James Jones is just there to, you know, give LeBron all the help that he needs. Sort of like, you know, Kevin McHale back in the day with Boston when Kevin McHale was the GM of Minnesota, and he traded Kevin Garnett to Boston for, you know, Al Jefferson and parts.
Hey,
and then, of course, Boston won the championship.
Right. Ryan Gomes and Sebastian Telfair had promising careers. They just didn't go anywhere afterward.
Yeah, real promising there.
So I guess for Ariza, the major guy would be KCP, right? He's also on a one-year contract. He's at $12 million, except he's got a 15% trade kicker. And what is it like? Does he actually have a no-trade clause or something? Like, how does he have that much power over the situation?
I don't know, but LeBron's agent, funny enough, is the one that got him that contract, but he apparently has the right to approve or disapprove a trade. Sort of like with, you remember, I'm not sure if you remember this, but way back when Devin George had the same type of thing in his contract and he declined, you know, to go to the New Jersey Nets at the time when they were trying to trade him there. So these fringe players, I think after a certain amount of years in, they can arrange for this to happen in their contract as part of their bird rights. So he has veto power over this trade if, you know, he's part of it, which it seems like he sort of has to be based on his contract, because they really don't have any other players that are at the $12 to $15 million level. And Ariza's making $15 million a year, so you have to make the contracts match.
Yeah, the next highest paid player would be Rondo at 9. I mean, I guess you can do Rondo and, like, Lance. The two of them together would be around 14 or 13 and a half. Throw in some cash, and then you've got Ariza on your team.
I think they would also have to give up a first-round pick, which I'm not sure they're going to be willing to do that, or at least a second, like a high second-round pick.
I would give up a first round.
I think Ariza still has value around the league.
I would give up a first round for that, plus Rondo and Stevenson. I mean,
for a one-year rental? I don't know.
The Lakers aren't going to be a bottom team, though. So you'll get a draft pick earliest would be 15. I doubt that they'll be that bad. I think they would be like probably the 20th pick.
Yeah, and plus it is a LeBron-led team, and LeBron's not a fan of having to wait for all these young players to develop, obviously. I think in the offseason, they're going to make a big change no matter what. I think a lot of these younger guys are not going to be in the team anymore, if not by the trade deadline. So I think another younger player in the 20 to 30 range in the draft is not an ideal situation. So, I mean, it does make sense for them to try to get Ariza this year. Even though their team is not going to do anything special this year, I don't think. I mean, best case scenario, they make the conference finals. And even that, I wouldn't even guarantee that, obviously. I mean, their team is going through a nice stretch right now because they're playing against really bad teams the last 10 games, essentially. And funny enough, you probably wouldn't believe this, but their defensive rating is actually better now than their offensive rating, which is something you would never expect after the first like 10 games of the season where they couldn't stop anybody.
But it makes sense, though. These guys are so friggin' long. And you have guys like Lance who, you know, pride themselves on being, like, fake hustle players. Maybe he's turned into a real hustle player.
Or they just stopped playing him, which they have.
Yeah, I know. They do have Tyson Chandler, though. Tyson Chandler is still a solid defensive anchor. And then, is LeBron actually playing D, though? That's the real question.
Well, I think it's also a matter of their competition lately. That's, you know, both of them from being like a 20th ranked defense to their 9th now. And they're 14th in offense because they can't shoot, but they play at such a high pace that they score a lot of points on the break and in the paint, obviously. Kuzma's like their only one consistent shooter so far this season besides LeBron. Josh Hart has been inconsistent, but this team, you know, it's shown flashes, and Lonzo's played pretty well since Rondo's been out too. I think that's the thing they have to look at, though. I mean, if they are going to, you know, be trading somebody that, you know, besides KCP because he has the veto power, maybe the deal is to get rid of, you know, Rajon Rondo, even though him and LeBron seem to have a, you know, a good friendship. And LeBron may not want that, but they seem to play better without him.
What a shame, man. How are they, what? They're not top 10. What are you talking about?
In defensive rating, they're ninth right now.
I see them at... Oh, sorry. I'm looking at opponent points per game. My bad. Opponent's points.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You got to count for pace and all that. And it's per 100 possessions, so...
Oh, that does matter. Because at the end of the game, it only depends on how many points the team scores. Sorry, I'm not an advanced stats nerd like you are. I'm not going to make it to the Sloan Conference, you know?
Doesn't seem so.
So, Ariza, theoretically, if you made this trade, you would have Ball. Who would be... Who's the two now? Hart? KCP?
I think right now Josh Hart is starting.
Okay, so Hart, Ball, Ariza, LeBron, and Tyson Chandler.
Yeah, but the problem is with that is, you know, Ingram's been out the last couple of games, which is why Hart is starting, so you would think that he would still start. So I think Ariza's a guy you bring off the bench in that situation.
Interesting. But the issue is that Ingram and LeBron haven't actually been meshing well together. Ingram has actually played a lot better whenever LeBron's been on the bench, and he's had full control of the offense. So would you want him to like lead the bench unit and just completely dominate other bench units around the league? Because that dude is long, he can score, he's a good defender, and he can facilitate. He just can't play with LeBron because they do essentially the same thing.
Yeah, his best role, too, is to be a primary ball handler. And he's, you know, excelled in that role, you know, based on his play in the second part of last season and parts of this year, as you said, when LeBron's not on the court. But when LeBron is on the court, he doesn't fit nearly as well as a guy like Kuzma who can just spot up and nail 40% of his threes. Because Ingram is more of a rhythm player where he needs to dribble the ball a little bit, get in the lane, you know, and touch the ball on multiple possessions in a row. It does a little bit, yeah. I mean, but he's a better playmaker than Rudy Gay, though.
Yeah, yeah. I just meant like the, having to be in rhythm with the ball in your hand.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Not everyone can be Kuzma who will just catch and shoot or bully people inside.
And at the same time, even if Ingram doesn't fit with LeBron, you still have him on a rookie contract, and he's worth, you know, a lot around the NBA. So if it doesn't really work out this year, you can always just look to the offseason and try to get value for him and try to include him in a bigger package for a guy like, you know, I'm sure the rumors will come up a lot with Anthony Davis. So,
ooh, Anthony Davis to the Lakers. Is that your call now?
That would surprise nobody.
It would be kind of weird. I don't think they would actually fit very well between Davis and LeBron.
You don't think that'd be a good fit?
I mean, yeah, you're right. It's kind of hard for Davis to not fit with anybody because he's that versatile. But there's just something, yeah, I know, I take it back. I was trying to get hot takey, but it won't work.
Yeah, Davis and LeBron, it's like a magic. I mean, he's already an efficiency monster, but I mean, he gets so many more dunks and transition plays just with LeBron being in the lineup.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to try to do as much.
You're right.
And his defense would be so much better, too.
What? Whose defense would be better?
Anthony Davis. Just not having... Because you don't have to do as much on the offensive end that he can save more of his energy for the defensive end. It's sort of like what happened with KG in Boston his first year. I mean, he's still an amazing defender in Minnesota, obviously. But with having two superstars around him and then Rondo coming up as well, he didn't have to do as much on offense. He didn't have to average 24, 25 points a game and handle the ball, you know, 35% of the time. And when you don't have to do that, then your defensive efficiency just goes way up and you can focus more on putting more energy into stopping guys on the perimeter.
But then he would have to clean up for LeBron's defensive lapses too.
Just in the regular season.
Yo, regular season and games 1-6 of any playoff series.
Yeah, that's true.
LeBron doesn't show up for the playoffs until game 7 or the finals. Let's be real.
So yeah, it's often true, especially the last couple of years. But LeBron has been surprisingly healthy the last year and a bit. He hasn't really sat on any games.
He chills.
This is true.
Man, LeBron.
But he hasn't gone into sabbatical, which is sort of surprising.
He doesn't need to. He takes mid-game sabbaticals, dog. I swear he sleeps more on D than James Harden does now.
Let's relax here. James Harden has been sleeping on defense the entire season.
So is LeBron. Yo, LeBron does not play any defense anymore. LeBron hasn't played defense in 2 years. And anyone
at least with LeBron, though, you're not like actively trying to seek him out defensively as the other team, whereas teams just try to get the switch with James Harden every single time.
when they're playing Houston. So I don't think teams are actively trying to seek out LeBron to be on the ball.
No. You don't seek out LeBron to be on the ball. You seek out a backdoor against LeBron. Because he doesn't look for cutters anymore. He just chills and lets people run wherever they want. He just keeps an eye on the ball so he can try to get an interception. Or a steal, sorry. Right? He tries to pick off the pass to start a fast break every time. But as a result, he doesn't see his man actually going backdoor on him.
Yeah.
So he's always focused on the wrong side of the ball now.
Yeah, and it's funny to see when that happens, too. There's a game, I think, last week where there was a cutter in the lane, and he switched onto the guy for absolutely no reason because the ball was still at half court at that point. And then his man in the corner got, like, a wide-open three, and he didn't even try to run at them at all.
And the worst part is that he, like, starts yelling at his teammates afterwards. It's like, yo, Lonzo, why didn't you get there? It's like, yo, LeBron, man, it's your guy. If you're if you're just gonna fall asleep, just fall asleep. Don't yell at me while you're doing it. I'm not here to pick up your shit. Come on.
Yeah, LeBron is the equivalent of like the old man in real life that just, you know, he just stops giving a fuck, you know?
Yeah.
So when he goes to, you know, family events, he just says whatever he wants to, has no filter at all. It's sort of like LeBron at the defensive end where, like, when that kind of situation happens where he makes a bad defensive mistake, he doesn't even try to make up for it anymore. He's like, eh, what's the point? I'm just going to do this. I don't really care what anybody says about me. You guys can talk about my defense all you want, but I'm still going to be here when the playoffs come around, and I'm still going to be winning games when it matters.
But nobody rips him for his bad defense anymore. Like, people are justify it by saying he's saving it all for the offensive end, but we never do that for other players. You know what I mean?
It's all about reputation around the NBA. I mean, he's become a media darling now, so...
Oh, God. I swear, next time anyone chops Lou Williams for having bad defense, I'm just going to say it's because he saves it for offense. You know what
and
I mean?
It's sort of like, it's like Kobe in his last, you know, 5 or 6 years as well, when he's still making all defensive teams, and he was a media darling back then, just saying whatever the hell he wanted to. People in the media loved him, and that's why I think he got the nod over certain guys when he was not playing any defense at age 33 and 34, but yet still making first and second all defensive teams while putting in zero effort.
Yeah. But Kobe's a legend.
So is LeBron. Let's not get into that debate.
This is true. Yes, he is. All right. Where are we going to take this to next? You want to go east somewhere? You want to talk about your Wizards and how Fat John Wall is just taking time off now?
No, nobody wants to talk about the Wizards. Let's talk about Oklahoma City.
Oh, the best defense in the league currently.
The best defense in the NBA. And I think that's
at number one in the West, Oklahoma City.
Indeed. And they've had a pretty tough schedule to start off, too. But they've had, I think, the best defensive lineup thus far, despite not really having a shooting guard. I mean, they've been starting rookies at shooting guard the entire season between Diallo and, I guess, Ferguson's a second-year player, but he's really a rookie right now because he didn't really play that much last year.
Yeah, he's a rookie.
Yeah. And, you know, Dennis Schroeder has been a big upgrade over Fat Felton. So that's been a plus for them as well. I want to see what Felton looks like on the bench right now. If he's just like one big blob that takes up two seats on the bench.
Yo, get out of here, man. This guy's a savvy NBA veteran, all right? Show some respect.
I know you're a big fan of Ramon Felton. But,
I am. I don't know why, but I love Ramon Felton.
I mean, I guess it's not bad to have as a third-string point guard, but, you know, Dennis Schroeder's been a solid fit, and he's filled in pretty well. Westbrook has been injured. They started off the year really, you know, awful with, I think they lost their first three games with Westbrook out of the lineup. But since that point, obviously in the fourth quarter, having those two guys play together has been a success so far. I'm not sure if it's going to work in the playoffs when teams can just sort of single out Schroeder and his defensive, you know, deficiencies. But Paul George and Steven Adams have been great on defense, and I think replacing Melo with Jeremy Grant, placing those minutes and just not having a guy out there that you can just pick on every single possession has been huge for them.
Wow, man. Somehow, some way, in every podcast, you just have to get a Melo shot in.
I have to, man. It's what it is.
It's pretty impressive how much Paul George and Steven Adams have been carrying this defense. Paul George, probably in the talks for Defensive Player of the Year right now.
Adams, too.
Yeah. They'll end up splitting votes, which kind of sucks. But these two have been so consistent all year. Steven Adams is back to averaging, what, like, I'm assuming around 10 boards, 15 points-ish?
Maybe around 10 boards if Westbrook wasn't on the team.
Oh, man, if it wasn't for Westbrook, he'd be averaging 20 boards. Yeah, he's averaging 15.4 and 10 right now. PG is averaging 24 and almost 8 rebounds. With 2.24 steals, that's insane.
Yeah, I think with their style of defense, too, they just tire teams out by the fourth quarter. They just pressure them, you know, the entire game, especially with having George and Grant on the perimeter. They get a switch on everything with those two guys. And even Adams is really good on switches as well. And they've sort of laid back a little bit on the pick and roll coverage with Adams. They don't have him coming up as much.
It's tiring.
Unless they're playing against a team with like a Damian Lillard or Steph Curry. It is tiring. And yeah, he's been able to play more minutes because of that and not get injured thus far this year. So Adams is super capable of getting there and pressuring the ball and just speeding teams up. But as I said, I mean, Oklahoma has played more of a lax style with him on the pick and roll, where he just stays back in the paint, sort of like you would with, you know, Valanciunas, Rudy Gobert, where they're trying to give up that, you know, 15-foot mid-range shot or like a long two. And, you know, against teams like Portland or Golden State, that's going to change, obviously, with Lillard and, you know, Curry and guys like that. But he's been incredible thus far this year. And that little floater shot is one of the most effective signature moves in the NBA. He shoots that shot from like 15 feet and it seems to always go in.
Wow, the fact that you said Steven Adams has a signature shot within the NBA is insane.
He does, though. Hey, who else shoots that one-handed shot from 15 feet?
Mike Conley.
I mean, he's a big man, though. Oh, you don't see centers do that. They either like get all the way to the rim, they try to dunk it or lay it up, or they try to shoot like a step back or a fadeaway jumper. He's like the only guy in the NBA that really shoots that specific shot.
Yeah, I guess you're right, eh? I actually can't think of anyone who shoots like a floater-ish kind of shot from more than even 10.
Yeah, I mean, Serge does it sometimes when he's on the run instead of shooting his, you know, pull-up from 15 feet. If he's, like, going to the basket and he stops short, he can shoot that little shot. But Adams stops complete. There's, like, a full two-step jump stop right at the free-throw line and shoots that one little, you know, the one-handed little floater shot. It's not even a hook shot.
That's so strange.
He needs to go in, like, 80% of the time, so.
Are they worried about any, like, being bogged down on offense during the playoffs? That's where I would be concerned about, right? If Russ is having an off day and you're reliant just on PG and Schroeder?
Yeah, I would agree. I think they still have one more move to make. But at least you have, I guess, five really consistent guys now with, you know, Grant in the lineup as well. And then Nerlens Noel has been pretty good off the bench as well. He's brought in, you know, a lot of energy when he comes in the game. He's very active defensively, and he's a guy, too, just like Steven Adams and Grant, that can get on the perimeter and switch on to guys and not be a real negative on defense. And they have a couple rookies, again, who we've mentioned before. Diallo's played pretty well this year when he has played. So I can't really, you don't really think they're going to rely on them in the playoffs, obviously, but I think there's a move out there to be made. Like a lot of teams, I just need one more shooter or wing off the bench that can give them 15 to 20 solid minutes a game where they can just be a spacer and play half decent defense.
What if they got Trevor Ariza?
That's another team that could use him. I mean, a lot of the contending teams right now could use Trevor Ariza. Philadelphia, Toronto, Indiana. There's a lot of teams out there that'll be, you know, in the mix for his services.
Yeah, let's do it. Except I don't know who they would trade, because their contracts are pretty big.
Yeah, and they're deep in the luxury tax, too. So they have to match it, I think, contract for contracts, essentially.
Yeah, you'd have to give up, like, Jeremy Grant, and I don't know if they're willing to do that.
No, they definitely wouldn't.
No. Or Abrines. Abrines has been really good this year, too, eh?
Hitting down. He shot the ball somewhat well during parts of the season, but he hasn't really been consistent because the coach still doesn't trust him. Coach Donovan doesn't really trust his defensive, you know, efficiency, I guess, on the perimeter, being able to guard guys, especially in, like, you know, crunch time lineups. So that's why Schroeder's been playing more.
I mean, it makes sense. Schroeder is one of those, like, pesky defenders as well. And if Donovan is really just going to focus on his defensive pressures, then sort of just let Russ and PG do whatever they want on offense and let them roll. All right, man, I think we've had enough praising of OKC. I can only praise Russell Westbrook for so long before I start to go crazy, you know what I mean? There's a significant quota that I just refuse to go past.
The funniest thing is, during this entire conversation with OKC, we haven't mentioned him once. Until now.
I did. I talked about how he has poor shooting nights, and then they need to rely on Paul George.
Yeah, I guess so. But normally that's all we talk about with OKC. We're talking about his triple doubles and him being the most overrated player in the NBA.
Well, yeah. Well, shouts to Russell Westbrook for going into, like, what was it, third place in triple doubles in NBA history now?
Yeah, I believe he just passed Jason Kidd.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Despite my hating on him and him being a stat chaser, he's done very well at chasing stats, you know what I'm saying?
I think you can also say that he has basically ruined that stat. Triple-doubles seem to mean nothing nowadays.
No.
It's because of him.
It's not because of him. It's because of the pace of the game, man. The game is so much faster.
No, I think it's mostly because of him. Rebound.
Get out of here.
It's true.
No, you love Harden. They're essentially the same player. Get out of here.
No. They are not the same player. Well, I guess they're both the same player in essence if you compare their playoff struggles. They both do not play well in pressure situations.
Yeah, kind of like Chris Paul.
Against the best teams in the NBA. Yeah. No. Don't, like stop TV. With the slander. Stop with the slander.
Nah, man. Let's go to Stats Corner.
All right, so this week I only have one thing for you.
Ooh.
Because I know that you have trivia for me this week. It's going to be very exciting for
Changing
me.
Changing it up, man.
Crush you since you haven't done so well in the stats corner the last couple weeks.
Get the hell out of here.
So we're going to focus on dunks this week.
Okay.
So Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis. Oh my god.
So he tied a player from the past, or I guess he's still playing right now, for the least amount of games to achieve 100 dunks in a season, which is 22 games.
Dwight.
So which player did he tie?
Is it Dwight?
Superman!
Yeah, you shouldn't have given
it away. You did well this week. Congratulations.
You shouldn't have given it away that he's still playing. Ish.
Yeah, I guess not.
Man, that was boring. I'm sorry.
Well, it's only boring because you got it right away.
Oh, man, sorry.
Most weeks I crush you, so
I'll
congratulations.
I'll edit it and make sure I add some other names.
I gave you a softie this week.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Next week, I'll give you a curveball.
All right. Well, we're going to go to regular trivia instead of your stats-based trivia because it's a lot funner. Obviously, everyone's been talking about how old LeBron and Dwayne Wade are. They're obviously the last few from that draft class. So tell me, who else is still in the league from the 03 draft?
From the 03 draft?
Other than Dwayne Wade and LeBron, obviously.
Yeah, of course. How many players are there?
Four in total.
So including them, right? So just two other guys?
Yep.
Two other guys in a 2003 draft. I can mostly just remember the guys that are not in the league anymore. Of course, Darko. Melo, I guess, is...
Yes, Melo is still...
Sort of in the NBA?
Melo is still on the roster.
We count him?
Yeah.
Okay, so we count him? All right.
Yeah.
And, obviously, no Heinrich, no Kamen. Actually, no, nope. Kamen's not in the NBA.
Nope. No Bosch,
Darko's
no
obviously
Josh
not
Howard.
There.
There's a lot of guys. We can name off, like, the whole draft, but you gotta go to, like, the second round for this one.
That's what I figured. Nick Collison was in the NBA last year. Unfortunately, he has retired since then. Second round.
Yeah.
That's tough. Is he a shooting guard?
He is. Impressive.
I was just out of the blue.
I guess you had a 20% chance.
Exactly.
Let's say he was LeBron's teammate last year.
Oh, J.R. Smith?
No.
No. LeBron's teammate last year.
Yep.
In Cleveland. Shooting guard.
Yeah. You love this guy.
So it's JR. Who is Al Korver?
Yeah.
Ah.
Al Korver.
Good for him.
Now, a little older than that, we have the 2002 draft with only one player remaining. Who could that player be?
Who was the top pick in that draft?
Let me take a look.
That's not the Kmart draft. That was 2 years later. Is it Kwame?
Yao Ming was number one.
Yao Ming. Oof, that's tough.
Yeah, Yao Ming. Amar'e Stoudemire was the rookie of the year.
Yeah, it was a Boozer year, too. Boozer was in that draft. Oh, PJ Tucker. No.
What? No.
That was later on.
Whoa.
I was trying to go deep in the second round again.
Holy.
That was a Monte Ellis draft in like 2006, I think.
Yeah, 06, 07 was them. Other notables in this draft, you had Tayshaun Prince, Nad Kristic, John Salmons, your boy Chris Wilcox, and...
John Salmons, man of God.
Yeah, right.
God told him not to play for the Raptors.
Yeah, I know, and he didn't. He listened to him.
Until he got traded there, he was forced to play there, and then he messed up the impact play. Anyways.
back to the question here. Who else could still be around?
2002.
Drafted by the Knicks and traded to Denver immediately. Big man.
Nene?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Oh, that's a lot of hints. All right, this one will be slightly easier now. 04 draft. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players. One of them was in the league last year, but sort of isn't now. He hasn't officially retired, but he's trying to make a comeback. But 04.
Like Baron Davis?
Making a comeback to the big three, apparently.
He's always trying to make a comeback. Right. 2004. Who was the topic in that draft?
I just mentioned him. He was your answer.
What? Baron Davis?
No. The answer to your trivia.
Oh, Dwight.
Yeah.
Oh, Mecca. Yeah, Mecca's sort of in the NBA. He's like on 10-day contracts
sometimes.
I don't
think he still is anymore, but yeah, we'll throw him in there.
You got a training camp invite from New Orleans, at least.
True.
Speaking of which, like, Jahlil Okafor hasn't played the entire season. Just sort of weird.
That's a sad story. I don't want to go there.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
04, let's go. You got six more guys, or seven more guys to go.
2004.
See, these are the drafts that, like, no one really thinks of. After 03, everyone's like, oh, whatever, nobody cares. 04 was a pretty good draft. Lots of role players in this draft. Alfonso's MVP is in here.
Iguodala?
Yep.
Oh, it's that draft. Rafael Araujo.
Yeah, Rafael.
Big Hafa.
Yeah, Big Hafa. Definitely still big in Brazil. Iggy's current teammate off the bench.
Oh, Livingston?
Yes, sir. Number four when he still had cornrows.
Man, I loved Livingston out of the draft, too. I thought he was going to be the next Jason Kidd. He could have been.
Livingston was amazing when he was young, man.
Yeah.
He was so smooth. So smooth.
His passing was incredible, too. His court vision.
Yeah. All right, we have a player who was almost killed by Tom Thibodeau, in your words.
Luol.
Yes, sir. Number seven. Number five is a random one. Point guard. If I say the names or the teams, you'll know instantly. Kind of looks like a chipmunk.
Kyle Lowry?
No.
He does look like a chipmunk, though.
Yeah, he does, but not this guy. This is more of a chipmunk.
Sebastian Telfair?
No. Before his current team, he was in Denver.
Guy who looks like a chipmunk that was in Denver. He smoked a lot of weed, too.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know their personal lives. I'm not putting his business out there. He was on the Nets for a while. He hit a crazy half-court shot as his like career highlight.
Jesus.
It was like a playoff shot.
Playoff shot?
Yeah, someone like stole the ball from him and he fumbled it and then still got the shot up. He's in Dallas now.
I'm blanking. Oh, Devin Harris.
Yes, sir. A Henny King.
A Henny King?
Henny, you know. He's always drinking Henny.
Oh, JR.
Yes, sir. Number 18. At 18 years old at the time, JR Smith.
You should have made a pipe reference, sir.
Sorry, I was going to talk about his Supreme logo. Dwight Howard's running mate for a long time.
Ryan Anderson?
No, his point guard.
Oh, Jameer? No, yeah. That's not Jameer's not anymore.
Yeah, no, he was the other... I should have said there were two guys who played last year.
Okay.
Yeah, and the last guy, another second-round pick. We talked about him a lot today.
P.J. Tucker?
Get out of here with your P.J.
Monte Ellis, no. Second-round pick that we talked a lot about.
Yeah. Could be used by a lot of teams.
Oh, Ariza?
Yeah.
He's a second-round pick, eh?
43 to New York.
Oh, yeah, I remember those days. He was one of the biggest projects for them back then.
Yeah, and he turned out pretty okay. Not because of New York, but, you know, after he left New York, he was solid.
once he went to LA, his game blossomed.
Exactly. Shouts to other guys like Josh Smith, obviously slam dunk champion.
Also, getting back to Josh Smith for a second.
Yeah.
You want a Zion comparison? That is the Zion comparison there.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm surprised nobody's mentioned that.
But like, Zion's smoother, though. I think he's got a better offensive game than Josh Smith did.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're both pretty raw. I mean, if you go back to Josh Smith's first couple of years versus what Zion looks like right now, Zion's obviously a much bigger player.
Yeah.
He's 280 pounds, which is, you know, we haven't really seen a guy that like that besides LeBron.
LeBron wasn't that big. Like,
to come out of college, no. LeBron came out at like 240, I think, which is still huge for a 19-year-old.
LeBron or 18-year-old that time. LeBron's around 260 now. He's not 280.
Zion, he was 280 at one point, though.
Really? In, like, Miami?
But, to start the year off, but he probably had cut it down throughout the course of the season. Sort of like, you know, when Bosch had muscles that one year in Toronto. And then 40 games, then he lost it all.
So disrespectful.
I think Chris Bosh went from 240 to 220 in a span of 3 months.
I wouldn't be surprised, man. You got to work hard in the NBA. You do two-a-days with suicides.
Couldn't hold the weight.
True. He's probably sweat it all out.
All right. But yeah, I mean, Zion and Josh Smith, they're both super explosive players who can handle the ball at, 6'8", 6'9". And obviously they're massive leapers. They can jump, 40 inches, 45 inches.
Yeah.
Great dunker, obviously.
I think he's more similar to like Blake or Sean Kemp. Or Sean Kemp or fat. Or like later Sean Kemp, that type of body. But more so like Blake. Decent handle, crazy ups.
But the difference is like Blake and Sean Kemp came in pretty polished in the post, especially. Whereas Zion has zero post game. He's more of a perimeter player.
That's true. Yeah. And then Josh Smith didn't have either game. He was just a freak athlete.
Yeah, he should still be in the NBA based on his skill set, but he just never really worked hard beyond his first, big contract.
Yeah, shouts to Joe Dumars for giving him all the money he wanted.
Yeah, that offseason they gave him a bunch of money. And was it Ben Gordon?
Ben Gordon got paid. Charlie V got paid. And Detroit started their decline. That was it.
Indeed.
Yep. Anyways, I think that's it for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, all the major podcast platforms. And until next time, peace.